Hello, I'm Tom Weber. Thanks for listening to NPR News here on the radio or online or on our podcast. This hour, a visit with music icon Sheila E., who has a new album out that includes this track.
Hello, Jesus. Jesus' children. Jesus loves you. Jesus' children.
Sheila E. was in town this week and came into the studio to chat with Andrea Swenson from The Current and Me.
Can I have a tissue? Sorry.
Oh, absolutely.
Wearing some fierce sunglasses. There was this moment before we started when she asked to throw out some gum.
Don't sell this gum, though.
Sheila E., eating gum? We'll be on eBay in an hour.
Uh-huh. So you never know.
That's disgusting.
It is. But people
would
purchase.
To you?
Yes. I was sitting at a restaurant one time, and a lady, I had just finished drinking and eating, and she took that. She saved it. She put it in a, what are you going to do with food that was
like a cloning situation, trying to get your DNA?
So like a sandwich?
True.
She took part of like a sandwich you'd been eating?
No, it was more like I don't know if it was fish and potato. I don't know, something. It was very interesting. And then my glass, and she's just, and I could see them in the back. They were all looking. Her lipstick is on the glass and the,
wow.
I don't know.
Such is the life of a music superstar. Sheila E.'s new album is called Iconic, Message for America. We discussed it and other matters, including sexual harassment and Prince's death. So take note if you're listening with little ears. For the album, Sheila E. has given her own funky take to several anthems from her youth that she thinks are just as important today, like the Beatles' hit Come Together. For this album, she brought in Ringo Starr to jam with her.
The aim was to bring awareness, first of all, to get people's attention with this record from songs that I grew up listening to, 60s and the 70s, that were relevant then and are still relevant with what's happening in our country right now. So, you know, I thought they spoke to me then, but really speak to me now. And some of the songs I ended up changing a little bit of the lyric content, but you know, and also pulling together by saying, you know, with peace and with love and bringing people together that we can change things. And we have the right to change things for the better, not the worse. So with love, we can unite people. With hate, we're divided. And there's much division happening. And I put together in my archives, my files. I had put a folder together that said, Politically Correct, which was an album I wanted to do a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, you know what, I'm going to put the dance record out first so that I have time to write. Because lyrically, you want to say something. And
yeah.
I knew it wasn't going to come easy. And I wanted to be smart about what I wanted to say and get people's attention and things that I wanted to talk about. But that ended up not happening. And so the easiest way for me to put something out at the beginning of the year, because we recorded this in May, was to go back and listen to songs that I thought were relevant.
That's so, I mean, that was an interesting thing I found in some of the other interviews you've done, is to say, this is an album of covers because I want to get it out now, but I don't have the time to write a completely new original album.
Right. Because at the same time, we've been touring. And it's hard to do a record on tour as well. If we had the bus like I did before, the bus, I had a studio on the bus and we were recording and then stopping wherever to record. But flying is insane. So the hours, we called it basically all year the 3:50 tour, because our lobby calls are at 3:50 a.m. to take the first flight out every day to get to the next place.
Wow.
And we don't get to our rooms until midnight or 1. And it's just, you know, man, how many days can you do that in a row? And I have to go to the studio and finish the record. So it was a little bit challenging to do that. But, you know, if I had the choice, I would have loved to have written something. But at the same time, choosing the songs. And it's funny, as you say, covers. It's I love these songs. I don't feel like I covered them. I feel like I've brought a message lyrically.
It's true.
And someone had said, how do you like covering? I didn't cover the song. I'm relaying the message.
I know.
I don't mean it like that.
No,
I'm just
I've made that faux pas before because there's a completely different vibe. You hear songs like Come Together, What the World Needs Now is Love, Everyday People. Yeah. I mean, it's a completely different vibe when you hear it.
I mean, I can't do those songs and cover and try to change how brilliant those songs are anyway. You know, it's just my take on it is really just bringing the message forth in a somewhat funky kind of way.
Oh, it gets very funky. Sheila, I had a chance to see you last time you were in town at Orchestra Hall.
I
was just in awe of how you walk out of a show of yours feeling so good. You just infuse everything with this really positive energy, and I feel that in the album, too. And I'm wondering, you know, it is such a divided time, as you said, and there is a lot of anger in the air. How do you focus back on the positive and bring that to the forefront?
Well, again, through music, you know, we can, we bring people together. So at our concerts, I mean, if you're going to come and see a Sheila E. show, you know we're going to bring good music, taking you out of the moment of what's been happening, but then also remind you, you know, again, that together we can do something. And I love what I do, and people come and what you guys give us, I can't even, there are no words to really explain how incredible it is. The feeling of that much love. I mean, how can I not give it back? I feel like, I can never give back enough what I've gotten. And that's hard. It's hard to look at or imagine. But, man, you know, for our families to come together, and I say families, fans, but families to come together to walk in that room with us and have a great time and go through the experience with us. You know, you feel what I feel. You know, if there's a moment that I'm crying, I know you're crying too, you know. There's a moment you're laughing, I'm laughing with you, or I'm making you laugh.
Sometimes I'm right, and I can be wrong. My own beliefs are in my song. The butcher, the baker, the drummer, and then makes no difference one group I'm in. I am everyday people.
Sheila E. is with Andrea Swenson and I in the studio here. Her new album is called Iconic Message for America. It's not covers, but it's a lot of songs you'll remember from when she was growing up in Oakland as well. And one side note here, this album has made the Billboard charts. It's the first time Sheila E. has charted since 1991 with the album you're all aware of, Sex Symbol. There was... the national anthem. You do the funky national anthem as part of this album, and there's this very elaborate video as well that has imagery of civil rights protests in the 60s, Black Lives Matter. But I have to rewind and think, well, you would have recorded this funky national anthem before all of this stuff that's going on recently with the NFL and the protests. There is one image of Colin Kaepernick in the video, but help me understand the timeline of doing a funky national anthem, what I think is before what we're having now with this moment over the national anthem.
Exactly. I couldn't have planned it any better. No, it just so happened to be. I mean, it's crazy. I'm trying to find where it is, and I know my fans will find out what date it was, but we were doing a Facebook Live. It was either at the early beginning of this year or the end of last year. The band was doing playing some stuff and halfway playing, and we're trying to get our ears together. And then the band started jamming. I was like, yeah, we're here doing sound check and blah, blah, blah. And next thing you know, that kind of funky groove was playing, and I just started singing the national anthem. So if anyone goes back to that live Facebook feed, that's when it happened live. I just started singing the national anthem out of nowhere. I don't even know what happened.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light?
So as we were done with that, later on we're like, you know what? If we're going to do this new record, we should probably, I don't know when I'm going to do it, but we should, you know, let's put this on the record. It's a good idea, and we should start with it, and then start with, you know, this whole concept of Funky National Anthem. And then all of a sudden, everything. I think, though, Kaepernick had done this early.
He did.
It was
early on. But the president hadn't gotten as involved as he has with in the
Who?
Last.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Well, I was wondering about that because you've done this funky version of the national anthem. It's got this great beat underneath.
Yeah.
I hope I don't offend you, Sheila, but I doubt President Trump listens to you very much or is looking at your YouTube page. But if you ever found this video, do you think he would come after you for desecrating the national anthem or something like that?
I'm sure he would. Yeah. I hope he does watch it and listen to it.
Me too.
I do. I think it'd be great for him to check it out and look what America is supposed to look like and what we're fighting for and what we're saying. Pay attention to what we're saying. You know, we want justice. We want respect. You know, this is, as we were talking about this earlier today, we are better than this. We are, you know, and bringing people together. What every day it's something ridiculous where he continues to divide this country. And everyone is, a lot of people, I shouldn't say everyone, I can't talk for everyone or speak for everyone. But a lot of people are angry. And that's not what our country is about. It's land of the free. And yes, we can speak, you know, and talk about what we believe in and what we don't. And we don't all agree the same things. But right now, a lot of people are agreeing to let's come together and fix the things that are wrong, because there's a lot that's wrong.
Well, and you follow up the national anthem with Come Together with Ringo Starr on the track. I'm just looking at this track listing. You've chosen such amazing songs. And it made me wonder, you know, especially with Sly and the Family Stone and Stevie Wonder, I know these are artists that Prince really loved too. And I was wondering, did you guys spend a lot of time listening to records together, listening to music?
Yeah, we did. Well, not spending time listening. I mean, when I first met him, I don't know what, 77 or something like that. I was playing with George Duke. So when I introduced him to my family, the Latin jazz music, he hadn't really heard of Latin jazz music like that. So he was very excited to listen to the band. And so being in the Bay Area, he loved the music coming from the Bay Area. So, you know, I took him around and introduced him to people and the music that has come. That's why he liked being there. Santana, Sly Stone, mm-hmm. and then now our family. And so we would talk about music, you know, growing up, listening to who we loved, you know, and who had influenced us. And we liked a lot of the same people. And then there were people he didn't know that I shared, and same vice versa. You know, I shared a lot of Brazilian artists with him. I love Brazilian music, some gospel music, Latin jazz musicians. And he would share different people that I had no idea who they were.
Did he know your dad? Your dad is a very well-known percussionist in his own right, Pete. Did he know of your dad before he met him?
He knew of him because at the time my dad was playing with Santana.
Right.
And so they were in the same studio. And so he knew of him. But the Latin jazz part, I don't think he knew a lot about that. He knew of the Santana mm-hmm. connection. But when we flew back to Oakland, and I said, you got to come see the family play. We're all going to play. And he showed up. He was just like a little kid in the candy store. He's like, this is insane, you know. You guys are, you know, so lucky to be able to play together. And how do you know all these crazy breaks and the music? And, you know, at the time, and still, my dad had like 5 horn players, bass, drum, guitar.
And this is just in the house?
Almost. <Right. laughs> No, it was at a small club.
Okay.
Small club. But we had a blast, yeah.
There seems to be a lot of connections between the Bay Area scene and the Minneapolis sound that Prince created. What is it about those two scenes, do you think, that melded together in such a great way?
Well, the Bay Area for us, I mean, most of my musicians come from the Bay Area. So there's something in the water that is happening in the Bay. There's a lot of great music and artists and bands that have come from the Bay. Like I don't know if there was like over 200 or 300 like really well-known bands that have come from the Bay. And then the amount of musicians and the music as well, and teachers that have come from the Bay Area. Me bringing the Bay Area and him coming to the Bay Area, but me bringing the Bay Area musicians and artists, he was like, I love everyone that's in your band. I love that kind of thing. And every time I had someone, you know, we end up using the same people. I think our musicians in the Bay are very incredible. And because of that, our connection, his connection to me and the Bay, you know, we brought a lot of people here.
Yeah.
This is our second home. I mean, it's home. It really is home for us. So, you know, and it's great to be here today as well. I mean, flying in yesterday, I just looked at coming in and the colors and.
Oh, yeah.
We don't get that in California.
No, you don't.
At all.
You don't get seasons in California.
No. The only season is salt and pepper. I mean, it's like, that's about it. But it's, you know, beautiful to be here. And that, you know, first coming here early on in the 80s, you know, there were some of the dirt roads, I mean, that are not dirt roads anymore. And it was a little bit different then. But I love it here. It's just beautiful. I was so happy to be here. I was like, I'm home. This is great. Mm. It's been a little while since I've been here, so it's just a great feeling.
You mentioned the dirt roads, and it reminded me, you know, Paisley Park just hit a milestone, 30 years of being in operation. And I believe you were one of the very first artists to use those studios when it was still being built. I was wondering if you could tell us a little bit about that time as the building was coming together. What do you remember?
Actually, before the building was there, while we were on tour, Prince and I would come here and look at the land. It was just all dirt. And every time we came, there would, you know, they put the pegs in there with rope. And that, you know, this is going to be maybe Studio A, and this is going to be B, and here's the kitchen. And so we'd step over and be like, oh, we're in the kitchen. We're, you know, there were no walls. There was no foundation, nothing. It was just dirt. And in our heels, we would step into the dirt, and it's mm-hmm. like, this is going to be amazing. It was just wonderful.
But both of you in heels.
Both of us in heels, holding hands, just going, okay, be careful, you know. Uh-huh. And so every time we came back, like we were there at the beginning stages of course he was, but us together walking the dirt of Paisley and watching this place become what it has become, it was incredible. And, yeah, I mean, at the very beginning, you know, Prince and I was one of the first to use a studio. I mean, because that's all we did was record and jam and play. And, yeah, it was a lot of fun.
For people who hear the very brief description that, you know, you collaborated a lot, you left, you know, the band after a while, and that you were briefly engaged to Prince, there might be this impression or misunderstanding of what your relationship was until his death. I mean, I think my point in bringing this up is it seems important to get across how close you remained, even past the most, you know, intimate or the most the height of whatever that relationship was.
Yeah,
not without 70, its problems, of course. Too.
Yeah, no, not at all. I'm just saying, like, I guess it was 77 or 78. You know, there were a couple of times I left, I came back, left and came back, you know, and thinking, all right, I've got to do something else. I want to do something else. And then, you know, maybe 6 months would go by or a year. And it seems like, oh, I only saw you last week. You know, time would just fly. And I'd come back and we'd start playing and recording. And it just never stopped. Yeah. You know, we were always at some point on the phone, or if we're meeting in LA or meeting somewhere else or New York, or, you know, it was, I don't know. I mean, even if we stopped for a year, it just seemed like a week, you know. It's a lifetime of memories, good and bad. And, but that's what life is about, you know.
How do you think Prince's legacy is being now? Is it being honored well? You know, you have the museum now, Paisley Park is open to the public. You have new music that hopefully will be coming out, at least from the fans' perspective. What are your thoughts in general about how his legacy is being met or honored?
Well, I mean, the museum came about later on when we were recording. I don't remember what record it was. And then later on he said, you know what? I want this to be a museum. He had so many artifacts and his awards and things that he'd had, and they were just in boxes, you know, they weren't displayed. So it was nice to see them out, and he started putting things. He worked really hard to Well, it was always comfortable. It was home. So I think the legacy, the museum, is something that he had always wanted, or later on. And I'm glad that it is a museum. I just thought at the very beginning of the museum, it was too soon. For me, it was too soon. And I didn't think that all the things were in place the way they should have been. There were too many of his things that were just laying out, and people weren't marking as to, well, this is item number whatever, you know, cataloging mm-hmm. what is in there. Anyone could have just walked out with stuff, and I believe they probably have, because it was too easy to it's just sitting there, like, you know. But at the same time, it was eerie to be in the building and it being left just exactly how he left it. You know, I was there hours after he passed, and it was the hardest thing to walk into the building and smell him as soon as I hit that door, and him not be there. That was devastating for me. But to walk in that building, because it's home for me, and my stuff is still in there. I've got all kind of stuff in there. And to walk in the building and knowing this is, it's still my home, but other people get to share it now. I think the legacy is his music. I'm not one to speak on whether they're doing it right or wrong, because they're doing whatever they're doing. I'm not in control of that. Yeah. I have no say-so. But if I was doing it, it'd be different. A little bit different, it would be.
Something that I find so remarkable about your long relationship with Prince is that he would invite you back. I remember just seeing you on all these different TV appearances that he would do, and kind of seemed like he would invite you there to be support or to make it extra cool. And through the years, it just kept happening. And I just remembered a few months ago that you were alongside him performing at First Avenue in 2007, which ended up being the last time that he would play the main room. Do you have any memories of that night? I know it was a very late night.
Well, I'm sure it was,
well,
right?
Come on, really?
Of course. That goes without saying.
Yeah, what? It was early. That was the beginning. Was that the time we played all three shows in one
yep.
day? Yeah,
yep.
We had a blast. That's all I can say. It was a blur and a blast. We had a lot of fun, you know. I mean, First Avenue is a place we had always played. Even at the beginning, just testing out songs. What was going to work, what wasn't going to work, you know. The fans here loved him, so at the very beginning we would play there just to, let's see if this song's going to work, you know. And I think we played at the Macy's, mm-hmm. somewhere in the Macy's, and then the Target Center.
Yep.
Yeah. No, it was fun. We had a good time.
And the city had to shut it down.
That's what he did. Shut it down. Absolutely.
It's so bittersweet, mostly sad, though, still to think about the fact that he's gone. Did you have any sense that there was anything wrong in the weeks leading up to it with, you know, we know what killed him now? And was there a problem?
Not that I knew of, but again, the problem was he was in pain a lot,
yeah.
you know, and I know how much pain he probably was in, because I'm in pain every day, just almost.
You are.
My hands, like I just went to the chiropractor yesterday to get adjusted. My neck, my hands, my finger wasn't working right. My elbow was out. I mean, we're like athletes. And so if you can imagine, I mean, I have on heels now, but walking and playing and hours and days and weeks and months and years in heels is not the best thing to, you know. So, let's imagine, let's just jump off a three-story sound system on stage every day, you know. Let's just jump off of that with heels on. You know, it looks incredible. It's amazing. You know, it messed up his hip.
Yeah.
So I know he was in pain, because I'm in pain, so I know. But if you don't work on keeping yourself together, you know, he didn't like to go to doctors. It's like, you got to go get adjusted. No, I don't need to get adjusted. Yes, you do need to get adjusted, you know. And when my back went out, same thing had happened. It was playing with him in heels. My calf muscle was shortened from playing in heels for so long that my back went out, and I was partially here in Minneapolis, walking. I was at my friend's house, walking across the hallway to the restroom, and my back, my legs gave out, and I was partially paralyzed for 2 weeks. So we called in doctors. It took 4 months for me to walk straight. They wanted me to have operation, all this stuff. So I know what that is. So no one ever talked about it because we don't want you guys to know we're in pain. We don't want you to know we have a cold. I have a sore throat. You know, the beginning of the Purple Rain tour, I lost my voice. They had to come bring doctors, give me cortisone shot. No one wants to talk about that. You guys don't need to know. You don't need to know that we hurt every day. It's part of what the gig is. So for him to be in pain, you know, he did what he wanted to do. He didn't want to go to the doctor, and that was his call.
When you had the partial paralysis, I think you also, this was when Sex Symbol was out.
Correct.
And I think you had a lung collapse at some point.
Exactly. My body shut down. Mm.
Well, I mean, first of all, how do you come back from that? And secondly, how do you, if your lung collapses and you're paralyzed for 2 weeks and it takes months to come back to walking, there has to be this reflection on, well, if I want to keep being a performer, I have to do something different.
That changed my whole life. That was it. That was in 90, 91.
Yeah.
I stayed here in Minneapolis. I got a house on the lake, and I mentally shut down, which for me was huge because I'm not a person that would shut down mentally. It's like I would always say, I can jump out of a plane without a parachute and land on my 2 feet, you know, and be Superwoman. That mentally shut me down. You know, I didn't know how to deal with that, and I was afraid, and I thought I was going to die. I thought my career was going to be done because they're telling me that I can't play, and I refused to accept that. No, I'm going to play, and I'm going to walk. So I stayed here in Minneapolis for the entire year. I didn't promote the record. That was a whole nother issue. So the album, just Sex Symbol, just went away.
Yeah.
And I stayed here, and I just had to reflect, and I had to look at and think about, you know what, I am not in control anymore. And I thought that I was. So, you know, this was the time of reflection, and spirituality came in, and giving my heart to God and just saying, you know what, God, if you just get me out of this, because I don't know what to do. You know, I'm mentally shut down. I'm afraid. I've never been afraid of anything. I sat here in Minneapolis on the lake every single day. And this was my healing, was to be here for an entire year and just reflect on life and think about, what do you really want to do? You have to change your life. You have to take care of yourself. Well, I didn't know I was doing that much harm because, again, I love what I do. We love what we do. So it's like, I want to look good. I want to play good. I want to, you know, make the fans happy and whatever that might take. You know, Prince was in the same place. He would do anything for his fans. And there's a sacrifice at some point. So you have to adjust to life and you have to accept, look, there's only so much we can do. We can't always say yes. And we do have to take those moments and say, you know what, I need to shut down for a minute. And it's okay. It's okay. We can't do everything. I always felt that I needed to help save the life of every child that had been abused. That was my job. I have to save every child. Well, I can't. But no, I don't want to accept that. Okay, then accept one child at a time. So it's those moments that I sat here that whole year and said, okay, what am I going to do with my life? I've got to take care of me first. And that changed my life.
This has been a pretty intense time to be a woman this past year, specifically this last few weeks. There's been a lot of talk about people coming forward with their experiences. I'm just wondering if you have any kind of words or wisdom or something that you would tell a younger person getting involved in the entertainment industry now.
Right. Well, it's not just the music industry. I mean, this happens and jobs all over the world and businesses. And it's a hush hush, you know, thing. And now that it's being exposed again, you know, the same thing had happened to me many times growing up in the business when I started working with other artists. And it wasn't the artists as much as it was other people working within the companies and saying to me, hey, I can make you a star. Here's the key to my room. Meet me there. Let's have sex and I'll hook you up. I mean, the proposals that I've had, hey, by the way, I can give you your own hotel in Vegas with your name on it. I mean, ridiculous things to have sex. this happened throughout my entire career thus far. I never accepted one. I'm proud to say I've never accepted anything like that. And I've always shut that person down to say, this is not who I am and I don't do this. But part of it was I had to realize when I became Sheila E. and I thought, okay, there are no rules. I can do whatever I want. Well, let me see what I can get away with. So let's see. Okay, I'm going to not wear this. Well, wait, I'm not going to wear this. Let me just cover up the bare essentials here, you know. And so then that promoted that kind of behavior, because then men would approach me in a way to say, well, you're on stage doing this. And I'm like, you're right. That's wrong. And I have to change that. So it was also, I'm not saying that the women are doing that, you know, and that's what's going on. But, you know, before I was Sheila E., I was being approached the same way. I slapped a man in his face for touching me inappropriately in a car. And who was a musician, a drummer, and touched me like that. And I slapped him and said, don't you ever. So for women and young women, you stand up. No means no. You know, you don't accept, you don't sacrifice, you know. The problem as well is we treat women and we use women as objects to sell things on promoting things on television. So, and again, I say we, I did the same thing, but I didn't, but again, I've said no, but I didn't understand what that meant until I stepped back and thought, wait a minute, you know, this is not right. So I dealt with the same thing. Mm.
You also, you know, you mentioned a moment ago about how I want to save every child who's abused, and that comes from your own story, which you've shared, that you were abused
right
growing up as well.
Mm-hmm.
Where has that journey to deal with that in whatever way you're supposed to deal with that brought you to today?
Well, I didn't realize it at the beginning that me being angry and upset at people and just, you know, joining gangs and wanting to harm because I was harmed. Being raped at 5 years old by our babysitter. He lived upstairs in our duplex, which was my aunt's brother. And then being molested by others. And it was, you know, not a good time. But I realized that if I started talking about it, well, I didn't know at the beginning, but if I started talking about it, it would help me to heal and not be ashamed of what had happened. And it wasn't my fault. And the more that I talked about it, the more that baggage came off of me. And I felt like, man, I could start to live my life, because you start to close up and you stand in a corner ashamed and bewildered and, you know, frightened, you know, and being told you can't say anything. So you end up not living the life that you need to live and experiencing life and all of the good things that God has for you. Once I started talking about it, those bags started coming off. I cried a lot, but man, it was a good cry. It was a healing cry. And realizing that every time I spoke about it, I was saving someone else's life, because they would come to me and say, I've never told anyone. And I said, now you're telling me, and I'll take that with me. And now you can start to live your life and begin your healing, you know. And it's not just women, but men too. I went to Korea one time. It was right after 9/11, actually, about a week and a half after 9/11. And there was about 40 of us going there to pray for that country. And at one point, I felt like that was something that I was supposed to share with the church when we went there. And they freaked out because they're like, we don't talk about this here in this country. I said, but this is on my heart. I'm telling you, this is what I'm supposed to speak about today at the church. And the church held about 300-400 people. And as soon as I started talking about it, I could look at everyone there and you could see who was affected by what I was saying, men and women. After we were done, I mean, the tears, and people were coming to ask me. There was a line, like most of the church stood in line for me to pray with them, to mm-hmm. just touch them and hold them, to say it's okay and you're going to be all right. If we don't talk about it, we're not going to change things. And if we're transparent about it, it not only helps us, but I mean me, but it helps other people. So I've stood for being transparent about these kinds of things because it has saved someone else's life.
I have a totally different topic.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask about Sign of the Times. Just recently got re-released. It was aired on Showtime, and that was a big moment for you joining Prince's tour as the musical director. Did you watch it on TV or have you watched it recently? And I'm wondering what it would be like to revisit it all these years later.
I don't have time to watch television. Are you kidding? I wish I could have watched it. I mean, I saw people tweeting, I'm watching you on Sign of the Times. I mean, it was nonstop. I haven't watched it in a long time.
Sheila E. is with us. Her new album, Iconic Message for America, it's out. Has a lot of guests as well. Ringo Starr, Freddie Stone, Bootsy Collins, Angela Davis, available now. This might be a little invasive, but I couldn't help but notice you're closing in on your 60th birthday, and maybe it's rude of me to have brought
How
that.
How dare you? I know. I'm just kidding.
But I want to, you know,
well, no,
Prince,
it's awesome.
Prince would have been 59 this year, and you're turning 60, and you're still performing. And I don't know, just reflect on turning 60. I think so many people have this image of you, right? You know, this young 20-something flying off the stage, and you still are, huh?
I am. My mind says so, my body says not, but no, I still feel like I'm in my 20s. I really do. I enjoy life more than I ever have, and I live each day like it's the last because nothing is promised. And, you know, turning 60, like it is a number, but it's a milestone, and it reminded me, like when we were talking about I started professionally at 15, so that's also a milestone of, you know, a lot of years performing. And I feel like every time I do so and every year, this is the beginning of something new. So I look forward to many years of continuing what I get to do as long as you guys show up and allow me to come and hang out. I mean, I'm there.
What the world needs now is love. Sweet love, it's the only thing that there's just to love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love.
Thank you so much for being here. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much. You are an icon, truly.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Lord, we don't need another mountain. There are mountains and hillsides enough to climb. And there are oceans and rivers enough to cross, enough to last till the end of time. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. It's the only thing that there's just too little love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. No, not just for some, but for everyone. Lord, we don't need another meadow. There are cornfields and wheat fields enough to grow. There are sunbeams and moonbeams enough to shine. Oh, listen, Lord, if you wanna know. For some, but for everyone. It's your love that can change the world. What the world needs now is your love, sweet love. What the world needs now is your love, sweet love. What the world needs now is your love, sweet love. What the world needs now is your love, sweet love. What the world needs now is love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. What the world needs now is love, sweet love. We need to love one another.